After going through all the laws to do with Trumas and Maaseres, and Maaseres and Maaseres Onu, Maaseres Sheni, we now come to the very last tithe which is separated. And interestingly, this last one is very similar to the first tithe which is separated, namely Truma. So the last one is called Chala, and that's a portion of one's dough. After he separated all the tithes from the grain when it was in grain form, so then he makes it into dough, and once it's dough, he needs to separate a gift called challah. And just like truma, it goes to the kohen. And just like truma, a non-kohen is never allowed to eat challah, even with the kohen's permission. And just like truma, the punishment for a non-kohen who eats challah by mistake is that he has to pay back the value plus a chomesh, plus a fifth. As well as that, it cannot become tomei, just like truma. And if it does become Tomei, then it still needs to be given to a Kohen, but then the Kohen has to burn it, although the Kohen can still benefit from the burning, just like Truma. Now another similarity between Challah and Truma is that Midoraisa, there is no fixed amount which you have to separate from the dough and give it to a Kohen. Midoraisa, even if you just separate a tiny amount and you give it to a Kohen, you fulfilled your obligation. However, Midrabbanon, it has to be a significant amount, such that the Kohen would consider it a gift, which he can actually gain from. And we'll see that in general, that amount is 1/24 of the dough. Sometimes it's half the amount, and we'll learn more about that later on in the Masechta. Now, Midoraisa, the obligation of Challah only applies in Eretz Yisrael. The Torah explicitly says, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, then this mitzvah will apply. And in that way, it's the same as the rest of the tithes. However, the big difference between Challah and the rest of the tithes is that Midrabbanon, Challah applies everywhere. Even outside of Eretz Yisrael, whenever you bake bread in an oven, one has to separate Challah. And the main reason for this is so that the whole concept of Challah doesn't get forgotten. Because if the Jewish people live outside of Eretz Yisrael for so many years, as they did end up doing, so if they would have never separated Challah from bread, then there was a danger that they would forget the whole concept of Challah. They would forget about the obligation, and even when they returned to Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't separate Challah when they need to. So to prevent that happening, with Midrabbanon, it's an obligation everywhere. Now, according to most opinions, the obligation in Eretz Yisrael is only Midoraisa if the majority of the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, according to those opinions, nowadays the obligation of Challah even inside of Eretz Yisrael is only Midrabbanon. However, there are opinions who hold that even nowadays, despite the majority of the Jews not being inside of Eretz Yisrael, the obligation in Eretz Yisrael is Midoraisa. Be it as it may, the Torah's obligation of Challah applies to lechem, to bread. Now, halachic bread is only that which is baked from five main grains. And therefore, chamish dvarim chayav b'challah, five things, five types of grain, would make the bread obligated in Challah. And that is hachitim, wheat, vasa'orim, barley, vakusmin, spelt, vishibilas, shul, and oats, vashifrin, and rye. These are the five primary grains, and only bread which is baked from one of these five grains, hara'ilu charam b'challah, would be obligated in challah. Now, how exactly do we know that the word lechem, bread, only applies to these five main grains? The answer is it's learnt from Gzeir Shova from matzah. Gzeir Shova is where the same word appears in two different places. In this context, challah and matzah, and because of that you're able to derive laws from matzah and apply them to challah as well. So just like with regards to matzah, it has to be made from one of these five grains, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, so too the same applies to challah. Furthermore, we're going to learn in a couple of Mishnah's time that dough is only obligated in challah if the whole dough itself is a minimum size, 1 1/4 kav. And the Mishnah tells us that umitztor from zemzeh, the different types of grains combine, meaning that if, let's say, the dough made up 1 1/4 kav, but inside the dough was wheat flour and barley flour. Since they are all part of the same dough, we consider it one, and therefore it is obligated in challah. Now, another law which applies specifically to these five primary grains is the law of chodosh, and that is that the crop which grew that year is forbidden to be eaten until Pesach, when the korban omer is brought on the second day of Pesach, and only after that point are you allowed to eat the produce which grew that year. Now, that prohibition only applies to these five grains. So these five grains would be forbidden under the law of Chodosh before Pesach, before the Korban Omer is brought on Pesach. And again, this is because the Torah uses the word lechem when talking about the prohibition of Chodosh, and it uses the same word with regards to matzah. So just like matzah has to be made from one of those five grains, so too Chodosh only applies to those five grains. Now, as well as you not being able to eat the new produce before the Korban Omer has been brought on Pesach, one is also not allowed to harvest the chodosh, the new produce, before that time. And therefore, it is also forbidden to harvest those five grains which grew that year before the Korban Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. Now, what exactly is considered that year's produce? So the Mishnah says, v'im hishrishu kodem la'omer, any grain which took root, so it was properly part of the ground and growing, chidim la'omer, before the Korban Omer was bought, ha'omer matiran, that year's omer permits them, so you'll be allowed to harvest that produce and eat it whenever you like. V'im lav, however, any produce which didn't take root before the omer was bought, as soon as Yovel HaOmer Haba, is forbidden to be harvested or eaten until the following year's Korban Omer is brought up. So that means that new produce is any produce which took root after last year's Korban HaOmer. Mishnah Beis, as we learned before, Ha'ichol Mehem Kazayis Matzah BaPesach, one who eats the size of an olive of matzah on the first night of Pesach, Yotzei Deichevosei, has fulfilled his obligation of eating matzah on the first night of Pesach, and that is only if the matzah was made out of one of those five grains. And this is very much connected to the next halacha, which is Kazayis Chometz. If somebody eats the size of an olive of Chometz on Pesach, Chayav BeKoreis, is liable to the punishment of Koreis, which is when one dies early, and there are other aspects of the punishment too. Now, the reason why I say these two laws are connected is because the Torah's obligation of eating matzah is put in the same posuk and right next to the prohibition of eating chometz. And it's learned from there that only grain which can physically become chometz, and that's only these five grains, only those grains can be used in order to fulfill your mitzvah of matzah. And then once we know that matzah can only be fulfilled with those five grains, we then apply that law to challah as well, and chodosh, as we described in the previous Mishnah. Now, just like it's forbidden to eat chometz on Pesach, it's also forbidden to own chometz. In fact, it's even forbidden to own a mixture of chometz and other things which aren't chometz. If you have a drink or a cooked dish, which is a mixture of chometz and something else, that is also forbidden to own. And therefore, the Mishnah says this, if one of these five grains gets mixed together with another species, another type of grain, somebody who owns that carries it over by Pesach, transgresses an avera of owning that on Pesach, and in fact, he transgresses two averas, one of owning chometz, and the second avera is owning a mixture of chometz and something else. The Torah says that that's a separate avera, to own something which is a mixture of chometz and something else as well. And the Mishnah is going to go on to something else which only applies to the five main grains, and that is with regards to nedarim. A neder is a vow which somebody can make to prohibit himself from benefiting from something. And so hanodim min hapas u min hatavua, one who makes a neder against benefiting from bread or tavua. Tavua literally means grain, and in the Torah, tavua can refer to many types of grains, not just these five primary grains. However, since when people talk about tavua, and the way that people use the word tavua only refers to these five grains, so Osra Bohem, he would be forbidden to benefit from those five grains, and if he makes an Eder against bread, he'll be forbidden to benefit from bread made from those five grains, but all other grains he would still be able to benefit from. That is the opinion of Rabbi Meir, who holds that these are the two only terms which would refer specifically only to these five primary grains. Now, the Chachom say, Hanedim in a dogon, one who makes a neder from dogon, which literally means that which is piled up, also, Eina Osa El Mehen would only be forbidden to benefit from those five primary grains, because that is what people generally refer to when they use the word dogon. However, according to Rabbi Meir, since dogon literally means that which is piled up, people also use it to refer to other grains, not just these five primary grains, and therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, if somebody were to make a neder against dogon, they wouldn't be able to benefit from any grain which is piled up, not just these five grains. And the Mishnah ends off with a sort of introduction to the next few Mishnayos, and that is that these five grains, v'chayovim b'chala, are obligated in both chala uva maisras, and they are also obligated in the tithes, the various gifts of one's produce which need to go to kanim or levim, or poor people. So these five grains are obligated in both chala and maisras. Mishnah Gimel, on the other hand, elu chayavim b'chala, the following things are obligated in chala, but of truma maisras they would be exempt from the rest of the tithes, such as truma which goes to a kohen, or maisarishim which goes to a levi. So what is on that list? Haleket, this refers to individual stalks which are dropped at the time of the harvest, and there's a mitzvah that these need to be left for the poor. V'hashikcha, these are bundles which are forgotten in the field, and again they need to be left for the poor. V'hapeya, and the corner of the field, or the edge of the field, which also needs to be left for the poor. So the reason why these are exempt from Maestros is because the Torah says the reason why you give Maestros to the Levi, for example, is because the Levi does not have a portion with you in the land. So he's missing out, so therefore you should give this to him to compensate. Now that doesn't apply to Leket, Shikha, and Peah, because any poor person, even a Levi, as long as he is poor, is able to collect the Leket, Shikha, or Peah. And therefore the Levi is not worse off than a Yisrael when it comes to these Leket, Shikha, and Peah. And therefore, when a poor person collects the Leket, Shikha, and Peah, he does not need to tithe it and give anything to the Levi or the Kohen. Rather, he can eat it all himself without tithing it. However, these things are obligated in Challah, and this is learned from a Posuk, which adds in extra words, and that teaches that there's an extra case where you're obligated, namely this case, the Hefka, produce which grew when it was ownerless. So it grew by itself, no one owned it, and then somebody picked it off the ground and became the owner. Now this produce is exempt from tithes, because again, even a Levi could have taken it from the ground, since it was ownerless. However, it's obligated in Challah, because by the time it was turned into dough, it was already owned by somebody. And the Challah obligation is dependent on when it is dough, so even if it was ownerless when it grew, now it is owned by somebody, and therefore it is obligated in Challah. Now the next one on the list is Umaisa Rishon Shenidla Turumasei. Maisa Rishon, from which the Trumas Maisa was taken. The halacha is that a tenth of one's produce needs to go to a Levi, and that's considered Maisa Rishon. And then once the Levi receives that, he has to separate a tenth of that and give it to a Kohen as Trumas Maisa. Now the halacha is that if a Levi received Maisa Rishon before the owner separated Truma Gedola from his produce, in general he separates Truma first, and that goes to a Kohen. But if instead of doing that, he first gave the Maisa Rishon to the Levi, that means that this Maaser Rishon still needs Truma to be separated from it. And therefore the Levi will also have to separate Truma as well as the Trumas Maaser and give that to a Kohen as well. However, there's an exception. And that is that if the Levi receives the Maaser Rishon before the produce was even obligated in Truma, meaning before the produce had been fully processed, so the halach is that he is exempt from Truma Gedola, since that obligation never even started. Now he will be obligated in Trumas Maaser, because that anyway starts when the Levi receives it. So if he receives Maaser Rishon, he always needs to give a tenth of that to a Kohen. But the Truma obligation only applies to fully processed food, and therefore this Levi will be exempt from paying that. So when the Mishnah says he's exempt from tithes, that's referring to the tithe of Truma. However, he is obligated in Challah. Again, why? Because the obligation of Challah begins once it's a dough, and the Levi makes it into a dough, and there's no reason to exempt him in that case, and therefore he is obligated in Challah. Alright, next one on the list, Maaser Sheni VeHekdesh HaNiftu. Maaser Sheni, or produce which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, which are redeemed. Now both Maaser Sheni and Hekdesh are exempt from tithes because they are not considered to be the owner's possession. They're considered to be the Beis HaMikdash, or Hashem's possession as it were. And we're referring to a case where they were redeemed onto money, so their sanctity was transferred from the produce onto money, which means that the produce became regular produce. However, this only occurred after the produce became obligated in Trumas and Maestros, which means that at the time of the obligation, the produce itself was Maaser Sheni or Hekdesh, and therefore it was exempt from tithes, because it's not their own possession. And the obligation of Trumas and Maestros is only on your own produce, but not if it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash or Hashem. However, it's still obligated in Challah, because it was redeemed before it was made into dough, which means that by the time it was made into dough and the obligation of Challah set in, the produce is regular produce, which didn't have sanctity, and therefore it is considered your own produce, your own dough, and therefore it's obligated in Challah. And now the Mishnah gives a very similar case to Hekdesh, a type of Hekdesh in fact, and that is Umeisar HaOmer, the remainder of the Omer flour. Now the Omer was an offering of flour which was very fine flour. And in fact, to make sure that it was very, very fine and soft without any large bits, the flour was sifted 13 times. Now because of that, there was lots of flour which was coarse and made up of larger pieces, larger bits of flour, and they didn't get through the sieve. So they weren't part of the Korban Omer. However, even that part was considered Hekdesh. It belonged to the Beis HaMikdash. Now what they would do with that flour, the part of the flour which wasn't offered up as the Korban, is that they would redeem the sanctity of the flour onto money, so the money would now be considered Hekdesh, and the flour would be not sanctified, and anybody would be able to use the flour for their own needs. Now once you receive that flour, do you need to separate tithes from it? So the answer is of course not, because produce becomes obligated in tithes when it's processed, and that's usually once it's piled up as stalks, but it's a way earlier stage than when it's turned into flour. So the obligation already passed, and at the time that it became obligated, it belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it was exempt, but the obligation can't set in later on, if it didn't set in when the produce was fully processed, and therefore it's exempt from tithes. But once again, it's obligated in challah, because the flour is made into dough once it's owned by somebody. And at that stage, it's not owned by the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it is obligated in challah. Okay, and finally, your svur shlehivya shalish, grain which didn't reach a third of its growth, and it was cut off the ground before reaching a third of what it would grow, what a plant like that would grow. So that is exempt from maiseres, from the tithes, as we learned at length in Maseches Maiseres, that only produce which reaches its onas ha-maiseres, its stage of growth at which it becomes edible, and at which the seeds can germinate and produce other seeds inside the ground, only once it's reached that significant stage of its growth does it become obligated in maiseres. However, it is still obligated in challah, because as we learned in the previous Mishnah, as long as the grain can become chometz, it can be turned into dough and rise, so then it's obligated in challah, and that can occur with this produce even if it hasn't reached its significant stage of its growth. However, Rabbi Eliezer says, Tavor shalevei yoshalish, grain which hasn't reached a third of its growth, patur min challah, is also exempt from the obligation of challah, and this is because, as we mentioned before, challah is compared to truma. So just like produce is only obligated in truma once it's reached a significant stage of its growth, the same would apply to challah, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer. Mishnah Dalet, now we've got the exact opposite. Eilu chayovim b'maiseres, the following things are obligated in maiseres in the tithes of turim and achalah, but are exempt from the obligation of challah. So firstly, as we saw before, all grains outside of the five main grains will be obligated in maiseres, but not in challah. So for example, ha'erez, rice, v'hadoichan, and millet, v'aprogim, and poppy seeds, v'ashumshmein, and sesame seeds, v'akitnyos, and various legumes and beans, and we've already seen this concept earlier on in the first Mishnah. As well as that, as we alluded to before, there's a minimum amount of dough which is obligated in challah. So something which is smaller, ufoches mechameshes revoim batavua, grain which it will produce less than a kav and a quarter of flour, so that will be exempt from challah but still obligated in maiseres, since even the smallest amount, even one stalk, will be obligated in maiseres. Now the remainder of the Mishnah lists types of doughs which are exempt from challah. Now, of course, the type of dough has no bearing on the obligation of maiseres, because maiseres have to be separated before it's made into dough. As soon as it's all been harvested and piled up, that's when the tithes have to be separated. So this discussion only applies to challah, and the Mishnah tells us that it has sufganin, some sort of sweet wafer, v'hadavshonin, dough which contains honey, v'ha'eskritin. This is a very thin type of wafer or cracker. The chalas hamasreis, this is bread which was cooked in quite an unusual way. They would put the dough into a frying pan and then pour boiling hot water onto the dough while it was in the frying pan. So in all of these four cases, they are exempt from challah because challah only applies to bread. And because these are all very unusual, and they're not the regular way that you bake bread, and the dough as well is quite an unusual way to make dough, the dough used for these things is much thinner than usual, and because of that, it does not come under the category of those things which are obligated in challah. And finally, v'hamaduma. A maduma is a mixture of truma and chulin. Chulin is unsanctified produce, regular produce. So if truma is mixed in with chulin, unless there's 100 times more chulin than truma, the entire mixture is considered forbidden for non-kohanim. Just like the truma. Now you would think that since really a lot of the mixture is chulin, so it should be obligated in challah. It's true that truma is exempt from challah, but chulin is obligated. However, it's learned from a posuk which says that as a result of making something challah, it will become truma. It will gain truma status. So that implies that before you make it challah, it hasn't got truma status. However, in the case of a meduma, we do treat the entire mixture as truma. Even if technically it's made up of lots of chulin, we treat it all as truma. And because of that, it is exempt from challah, as that posuk implies.